Welcome, everybody, to Health, Wealth, and Divine, also known as Jawanza for Life. My name is Jawanza. How's everybody doing? It's a beautiful, beautiful Friday afternoon, Friday evening, and just excited today. I'm very, very pleased to have an opportunity to come before you again. As you know, this is just something that I love to do, is to bring you information. I love to bring you positive information, life-changing information, life-saving information, and I just want to thank everybody for taking time out of your day to tune in and to be a part of this show with us, to spend the next hour or so with us. Well, for those of you who have been online, you know why you're tuning in today. You know that from time to time, I have the pleasure of interviewing a king. His name is Dr. Hehi Metura in Comet. He is the paramount king of the Washington, D.C., HESP of the Osiriset Society, and we've done some fabulous shows with Brother Orwa, and today's show is going to be no exception. It's actually the beginning of a series that we're going to be doing on the seven divisions of the spirit. That's right, the seven divisions of the spirit. I know for a lot of you that comes as a surprise that there are seven divisions to the spirit, but as we get into the show today and subsequent shows, you will see why it's important to know that and, you know, what this information is going to do for you. So without further ado, for those of you who are tuning in for the very first time and you don't know who Orwa Hehi Metura in Comet is, let me tell you a little bit about him. Again, very pleased to have him as my guest. Well, Orwa, Dr. Hehi Metura in Comet, has been a member of the Osiriset Society since 1975. He was appointed Orwa, which is Paramount King, by Shechem Ashechem Ra'unefa Amen, who is the chief priest and king of the Osiriset Society. As Orwa, he's responsible for guiding the lives of Osiriset's members and the society's activities in Maryland, Virginia, and Washington, D.C. He's a member of the society's Kerry Hebb priesthood and headed Osiriset's African Support Project. He holds a bachelor's degree in African American studies and a master's degree in education, both from Howard University. Just recently obtained his doctorate degree, and congratulations on that. And he's also author of a fabulous book called African Names, The Ancient Egyptian Keys to Unlocking Your Power and Destiny. So without further ado, let me move aside and get to my guest, because we're going to have a powerful show today. I guarantee you, Dr. Orwa Hehi Metura in Comet, welcome back to Health, Wealth, and Divine. Thank you, my brother, for agreeing to be my guest today.
Hello, how you doing?
I'm doing excellent, my brother. Great to have you back, as always. You know, I put the word out, and there are going to be so many people. Oh, my God, the phone lines are jammed already. And so for all of the people that are listening online, at any point during the course of this interview today, if you have a question or you'd like to make a comment, all you have to do is press 1, and I'll bring you on board, and you can speak with Brother Orwa. Again, today we're going to be talking about the seven divisions of the spirit. You know, Brother Orwa, first let me thank you again for being my guest today. I know that you're a very, very busy person, and to fit me in, to squeeze me in, I really appreciate that, because I know that your time is valuable, and for all of the listeners who have given up some of their time to tune in, I want to say thank you to you as well. I don't take it for granted that you could not be doing something else. So, again, if you have a question during the course of the show, all you have to do is just press 1. Brother Orwa, again, we're going to be talking about the seven divisions of the spirit. For a lot of people, that might come as a surprise, just even the title, the seven divisions of the spirit. You know, for those who are familiar with the Kemetic rituals and initiations and systems, it might not come as a surprise, but for those who might not be as familiar with it as others, it might come as a surprise. So for starters, we're going to do an introduction, okay? If you don't mind laying the foundation for the today's show and subsequent shows, what are the seven divisions of the Spirit?
Good question. Let's begin first with what is the Spirit? Well, let's begin back up beyond that. Let's first begin with what is man? And when we say man, we're talking about the collective man, divine spirit that's a reflection of God manifest on earth. As is said in our in the Kemetic scriptures, as was later put in the other scriptures of other people, that man is a divine being. Kemet was the most important epitaph that we find amongst the tombs. There's the statement, man, know thyself. So what does it mean to know thyself? What is thyself? So when we find that, when we study, we find that we have two aspects to our being. We have one which we call consciousness, which is that which is aware, perceives, etc. And the other aspect of being is what we call spirit. So the two, these two things together make up what we call ourself. So the self has two parts. One which is consciousness, that's which is immaterial. And since consciousness is immaterial, meaning it cannot be separated, factioned off, divided up, etc. It's boundless, it's eternal. And the other is called spirit, which is composed of energy matter. And since it's made of energy matter, it can, in fact, be parceled off and divided up and separated and organized. So we have these two parts, one which is immaterial, one which has a material basis. And the spirit, which part we're going to talk about, is a vehicle through which consciousness experiences itself. What do we mean by experiencing itself? To really get a good grasp on this concept, we need to first look at, well, what is the reason for being? Why does the world exist? Why is there life? Why was the universe created? For those of us who believe or know that there's a God, and we know that it's the hand of God that brought about what we call the world or the universe or creation. And creation of this universe or this world, whatever term you want to use, was created by God. But what was the purpose of it? Why did God manifest this world? Why did God manifest this universe? To understand that, we have to look at, well, what is God? What is the essential qualities of God? And there's pretty much a universal acceptance that God is an omnipresent reality, meaning that God is everywhere, simultaneously, instantaneously. That God is an omnipotent reality, meaning that God is all-powerful, capable of making anything happen. And that God is an omniscient reality, meaning that God is all-knowing. There's nothing that operates outside of God's sphere of awareness and jurisdiction. So if God it has these essential qualities, then why create the world? What's the purpose of creating this world? Is it to, as some people try to put it to be, that God is some grand puppeteer in the sky, you know, pulling strings and we're all dancing to his whims and her whims or whatever? Or is there really a greater purpose? And to go back and understand what this greater purpose is, we have to again understand the statement that we made earlier, that man is a divine being, meaning that man is made in the likeness of God. If God is a divine being and man is made in God's image and likeness, then so too is man a divine being, as is said in the Unitarian Volume 3. And since man is a divine being, then what is man's purpose for experiencing the world, for being in the world? So why did God create man? If God, all-knowing, all-powerful, and all-present, what's the purpose of creating another anything other than just realizing itself? Well, the answer to that question is, in order to truly realize itself, it had to create all the things that have been created. And what do I mean by that? To be omnipresent means that, as we said earlier, God is everywhere instantaneously and simultaneously. To be everywhere, meaning that God is in in the room where you are right now. God is in the body, your body. God is in the air around you. God is in the room I'm in. God is in me. It's in the air around me. It's in all the people who are listening. God dwells within them and around them. So God is everywhere at the same time. But prior to manifestation or creation, there was no place for God to be. Because before God activates his energy, matter, and creates the world, there are no things. All places are things. My room is a thing. My body is a thing. This computer is a thing. This phone is a thing. All these are things. And for there to be things, for God to be omnipresent, that means God had to create all things possible and then be there at the same time. So truly, for God to realize his potential, omnipresence is just a potential prior to the manifestation and creation of the world. Once God has manifested and created the world, then God can truly experience what it means to be an omnipresent reality. The same is true if we look at the other qualities, omniscience. This is look at omniscience. Omniscience means to be all-knowing. To know something, you have to experience it. But if there's no thing prior to manifestation and creation, there are no things, so you can't know anything. So God, in essence, could not be an omniscient reality until God created all things possible, and through experiencing these things, begins to know these things, to understand these things, becomes one with these things. So everything that's manifested, the purpose of manifestation and creation is for God to realize its potential. Because prior to there being manifestation and creation, God had the potential to know all things. But since there were no things, that potential could not be actualized. Prior to manifestation and creation, God had the potential to be omnipresent, to be everywhere. But if there's no places to be, how can you be everywhere? Prior to manifestation and creation, God had the potential to make any and all things happen. But there was nothing there to make happen. So the purpose of creation and manifestation is for God to realize, to give validity and actuality to its ability to be all-knowing, to be all-present, and to be all-powerful. And it makes these things happen through the vehicle that we call the self. And the self, as we said earlier, has two composite parts. One, which is consciousness, which is that aspect of divine being through which these experiences are known, through which these places are, and the other is through which the power is manifested, directs the power. But the manifestation part, the power, the creation part, is the spirit. It's the vehicle of actualization. Consciousness is that which directs actualization. Spirit is that which makes actualization happen. So these two things make up our being. So when we talk about the seven divisions of the spirit, we're talking about seven different vehicles that consciousness, our true self, has in order to experience its potential as an omniscient, omnipresent, and omnipotent reality.
You know, you talked about the potential in God that God had to experience his omniscience, his omnipotence, you know, his omnipresence, all of the arms. Can we talk for a moment about the potential in man to realize his or her divinity just by even knowing the seven divisions of the spirit, knowing the 11 laws of God, knowing all of the other different aspects of consciousness / will, energy / matter, just the potential in man? Because as you mentioned, that man is made in the image and likeness of God. So therefore, at our very core, the essence of who we are is the same essence of God. Like if God is the ocean, we're the drop of water containing the same, all of the same elements that the ocean contains. But the potential in man to actually realize that divinity, it's potential, okay? And it might not all occur in one lifetime without, and I hope that this question doesn't, or this this comment that I'm asking you to make doesn't take the conversation somewhere else, but could you talk about just the potential in man to realize his divinity by knowing the seven divisions of the Spirit, and as a result of knowing the seven divisions in the Spirit, then being able to use that information towards that end of realizing and manifesting his divinity on earth?
Well, before we get there, let's look at, well, what's the purpose of man as a created vehicle, as
okay.
a created entity? We said earlier that God manifests all things possible, and by experiencing these things, if we look at all forms of creation, from the slime mold, to bacteria, to quarks and photons and rabbits and roaches and lions and butterflies and oak trees and everything. Look at all forms of creation. What we find is that each vehicle, each form, has laws of its being. It has guidelines through which it operates, under which it operates. And each of these, and these guidelines aren't mutable. Trees don't mutate into butterflies.
Right.
An oak tree has certain environments, certain elements it has to function with and in. And if you take it outside of that environment, it's not going to survive. You're not going to be able to find an oak tree surviving in the Arctic, because the laws of its being do not allow it to exist there. So everything has guidelines that govern its existence, through which they operate and cannot go beyond.
Mm-hmm.
All creation is like this, except for one vehicle that was created, and that's man. Sure, man too has guidelines that our vehicles are prescribed to operate through and within. But we have something which other creatures do not have, which is what we call a free will. And this free will gives us the ability to choose to override our programming or go against our programming. It'd be like an oak tree deciding, well, I'm tired of living in Maine or Massachusetts or wherever. I'm going to move up to the Arctic Circle. It's not going to happen.
True.
Man is supposed, we're supposed to be, our vehicles are designed to be active during the day and resting at night. Insurance actuaries show that people who are workers at night have greater problems in terms of illnesses and accidents, et cetera, than people who work during the day. Because even though we're supposed to be active during the day and rest at night, we can choose to override that program. We can go against that program because we have a free will. Unlike all other forms of creation. To be so because man, as man being made in the image and likeness of God, then if God is a divine being, man is a divine being, meaning God cannot be compelled, God cannot be cajoled, God cannot express these so-called emotions, etc., because God operates with a free will. So then too must man have the capacity to operate as a free will. The problem is that the majority of people on earth don't realize that we have a free will. We come into the world in an environment nurtured and conditioned by and through and within that environment. And that environment, because of the training and the conditioning and the teachings and learning that take place in most people's environment. The environment circumscribes the abilities and the areas in which we believe we can operate. So we end up believing that I cannot be such and such, I cannot do such and such, I cannot go beyond this limitation, simply because we've been taught and it's being reinforced through the environment that this is still true. But the reality is that unlimited in terms of our capacity. Just if God is unlimited, so too is man's capacity unlimited. We have the ability to do anything that we need to do, as long as it's within our destiny. But we have to first understand that I have that ability. There are so many people whose lives are stifled simply because they're never shown that there's something else that they can be or do. And unfortunately, this is where so many problems we have in our communities is because our artists, in many cases, have lost the vision. Ancient times, in ancient Kemet and in traditional Africa, art was a vehicle that was used to inspire people to greater heights and greater accomplishments. But if all I'm doing is reinforcing the negative experiences that I have around me, then where's the growth, where's the change, where is the development going to take place from? If I believe I'm a product of this environment, that the environment controls me, the environment decides what I do, what I can do, what I'm going to do, then as the environment goes, so go I. But it's the idea, it's the understanding that and this is why we have to change the dialogue. We have to change how we see ourselves. We have to go back to that epithet and know thyself. And we have to know that we are a divine being. And as a divine being, we are unlimited. As God is unlimited, so too are we unlimited. But we operate within a constrict of law. And the law is of these 11 laws of Ma'at. So they're what guides the creation of what we call the universe. And as long as I'm living under the law, through the law, with the law, then I'm living as God. Because when you can make scriptures, when it talks about prior to Nebuchadnezzar, who was the term that was used in one of the scriptures, referring to the Supreme Being as the Creator, prior to Nebuchadnezzar creating the world, he first created Ma'at. He became the rock or the footing upon which creation took place. So what that scripture is telling us is that God stands on the law. Everything operates in the world based on law. And as long as I know the law of my being and I don't violate the laws of my being, then I'm unlimited in my capacity to accomplish and develop. So the spirit is the vehicle that we have to operate in the world. Consciousness is our divine self, right? Our divine being. It's that aspect of God, which is immaterial, which is all-knowing, potentially, etc., is what we have to work with, cultivate, develop, in order to realize the potential that is ours innately, that self that we talked about. To realize that self, I have to learn to cultivate and develop my spirit. Now, we talk about the seven divisions of the spirit. And in ancient Kemet, there's seven primary divisions. But there are other aspects. But we find, too, that in other African cultures and traditions, we also find that there are this idea that there's more than one, the spirit is a multifaceted reality.
Mm-hmm.
And that you can find that the more sophisticated a person is, the more sophisticated a culture is, has to do with its understanding of the spiritual world. In the Western culture, all we have the idea that there's something called spirit. But what's that? That's like saying, if I'm a chemist, there's something called chemicals. Yeah, that's true. But what can you do if all you know is that there's chemicals? What can you accomplish in chemistry, except blow yourself up.
Mm-hmm. True.
So if I'm talking about the spirit world, then I need to know that there's different areas and different gradations, different vehicles that I can access in the spirit world, which give me a different levels of accomplishment and development. So that chemical is just not a chemical.
Mm-hmm.
Spirit is just not spirit. So the more sophisticated the understanding of the spirit world is, the more sophisticated the understanding of the spirit world is. Those who don't have a very sophisticated understanding of the spirit world don't have a very sophisticated understanding of the spirit world. I know I'm sounding kind of redundant, but that's the truth. So if a person doesn't have a very, don't understand that there's all these different chemical elements, but I'll just say there's elements, then you can't expect that they really don't know much about how to take advantage of this knowledge that there are elements. If I don't understand that there's more than one aspect and part of my spirit, I just believe I have a spirit, then you can't expect that I'm going to be very useful or very accomplished in using the spirit, because I don't know what the hell I'm doing. It's like a person won't know what the hell they're doing if they go into a chemical lab and just start throwing chemicals around.
True.
So it's dangerous.
You know what's interesting about that, Brother Orwise, is that's how so many people live their life. You know, that's a perfect example you just gave concerning somebody not knowing what they're doing, and they're going into a lab just starting to throw chemicals around. And in life, many of us, you know, even prior to coming to this information, you know, lived our life like that. You know, we just throwing stuff around. We hitting some, we missing some, we, you know, winning and losing, you know. It's like throwing darts at a board in the dark, you know. And, you know, with this information and with the adage, know thyself, it's really clear that the ancients really codified a system in which you could do that. And to have a compass in life is so very, very important, because for a lot of people, just going through life, just, you know, hey, whatever, you know, hoping for the best, you know. But when you have a compass and you can follow it to get to your destination, you know, you talked about destiny, and just for a moment, a lot of people are under the impression that, you know, hey, I chart my own destiny. You know, I'm the master of my own ship, and, you know, all the sayings that go along with that. But every person has the same destiny. Is that correct? And that is to become Osir. Is that correct?
Ultimately, if God manifests the world in order to realize its true potential, and if God created man as the vehicle, the only vehicle in the manifested world through which this true potential can be realized, then we all have the same destiny. We're all here to serve as vehicles through which God can become itself. In other words, we're all here to become divine beings. Now, we all have different paths that we're going to take toward getting there, but we all ultimately have the same goal. So we may have different aspects that we need to focus on in a particular space and time, but as long as I understand that my goal is to become a divine being, then the experiences that I have as a part of my living, I understand, are all there to awaken the potential, the divine potential within me, so that I can become an expression of God on earth. But if you don't
know,
you don't know.
Yes. Go ahead.
And unfortunately, in the Western world, you know, which we dwell, there's a lack of understanding of these things. So we become a bumper sticker society, where everyone is, you know, the master of their own destiny, that the master of their own ship, or whatever bumper sticker slogan you want to do. But that's simply because they don't know any better. If I believe that I'm a human being or an animal, as some human beings believe they are, then, and I see what happens in the animal world, then I'm going to believe that that's where I belong. That's my, that's the limit of my existence. That's the limit of my potential. But if I understand that I'm a divine being and that God has no limitations and that the only limitations I have to operate with are the laws that govern the environment in which I'm operating, then that opens up a whole new level of underappreciation and excitation and activity in my life.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, but if I don't know, I don't know. That's, and that's the unfortunate part. And Western culture never cultivated that aspect of understanding. They've been very good at understanding the physical world to some degree. I mean, they can go in and break down, you know, the different atomic levels and this, that, how many electrons this particular element has and how many electrons this one has. But when it comes to the most important thing, the two aspects of being, consciousness and spirit, which in ancient Kemet was called Ra. So you had Amen and Ra. Amen represents that aspect of being consciousness, which is hidden because you can't see what's immaterial. And Ra represents that aspect of being which is manifested, the energy matter part of being. So, but if I don't have this understanding, if I believe I'm just here because an egg and a sperm bumped into one another at the right time, and that, you know, I'm just the result of that, and that's the whole purpose of life is to make money or to take all other people's land or whatever, then I'm going to miss the big picture, and we have what, the result is the world which we have. Think about what the world would be like, people believing that they have only the capacities that we have as human beings, with all the frailties and errors. I mean, you've seen the commercials about humans, what they do. I mean, all the problems on the world, of the world, in the world, are created manifestations of human beings. So, if there's problems in the world that are created by humans, then we have to see, well, is that really where we want to be? Do we really want to just be human set with all these problems? Because to be human is to be a problem. To be solve the problem, we have to elevate ourselves to love human, and that's to become divine. And if each of us says our goal to become a divine being and begin to really understand what that means, what does that look like? What does God look like as it manifests itself through me within the context of the universe and the world and my community, my family, my community, the world, etc. And we can truly transform where the world is and take it to where it can potentially go, where no man has ever gone before.
You know, Brother Owa, a lot of people come to religion, any type of religion, whether it's Christianity, Islam, you know, Buddhism, Hinduism, whatever, you know, because people, life, because of what we talked about earlier, you know, people throwing darts at a board in the dark, you know, missing most times, and as a result of that, come to some religion beat up with the idea that, okay, if I give my life to God, if I submit to God, whatever by whatever name, then life won't beat me up anymore, and it'll be smooth sailing from here on out. From the moment that I surrender and, you know, get on the God path, then my life is going to be smooth sailing from here on out. But if you could talk about, just briefly for a moment, challenges/opportunities, and how challenges/opportunities are the tools that are and can be used to actually realize our divinity if we meet these challenges/opportunities with peace. That in life, we're going to have challenges. We're going to have, which I'm using this word challenges and slash opportunities, because if we actually change the way we look at opportunities as opposed to looking at them as challenges, looking at them as opportunity stepping stones towards my divinity, how we can actually use these things that, these events that we experience in life as just that, opportunities to realize our divinity.
Well, first we have to come to the understanding that the situations that we come in contact with as a part of our life are there to do just that, to challenge us to go beyond the limitations of the lower parts of our spirit, to tap into the abilities of the higher parts of our spirit through which we're able to experience our divinity in full. So this is kind of like leading us into a discussion of these seven different vehicles. We're not going to go into them in depth, but we'll just kind of give an overview. Let's say, for the sake of discussion, that there's seven different vehicles that you can travel in. And we'll say the first vehicle is going to be a pair of tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And the second vehicle is going to be a bicycle.
Mm-hmm.
The third vehicle is going to be a car. The fourth vehicle is going to be a boat. The fifth vehicle is going to be a train. The sixth vehicle is going to be an airplane. And the seventh vehicle is going to be a rocket ship. Now, all of these vehicles enable you to move around. But each vehicle, because of the nature of its being, is going to afford you a different quality and quantity of activities. I mean, you're not going to be able to experience the world in which you live as broadly if all you have is tennis shoes that you're walking around the world in, as opposed to if you have, say, a bicycle. Because a bicycle is going to enable you to go places where you won't get to with your tennis shoes. If you have a car, that's going to afford you a different level of experience. You'll be able to expand your horizon, so to speak. You're going to see much more of the world. It's a different kind of experience. It's not going to be as tactile as necessarily having tennis shoes, but by the same token, you're going to have a broader perspective on the world around you. If you're traveling by train, that's going to give you a different kind of experience. You're going to see different parts of your environment that you don't see when you're traveling by road, by car. If you're on a boat, it's another kind of experience. If you're on a boat going down a river or a boat on the ocean, you're going to see the world differently because of the vehicle affords you a different level of experience. If you're in a plane, you're going to see the same earth, but you'll have a different perspective on the earth, down on the earth, and you'll see things from a higher vantage point. So you begin to see that, you know, that obstacle that looked so big when you were walking up to it, it really is very minuscule. It's like you might not even be able to see it from a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're in a rocket ship, then that's going to give you a whole different level of experience. You're going to be able to see the earth from a different perspective, the whole of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So, and your attitude determines your altitude, meaning what you can see, how you, emotional and visceral and images and processing that takes place through your being, through your body, is going to change your outlook on life based on the experiences that you had. So the perspective that I'm having a problem here, if I'm walking down the street and there's this big boulder in front of me and it's like blocking the whole road, it's like very high and very low, very wide, and I can't go around it, I can't go over it, I can't go under it, you know, it's that kind of boulder. if that's all I have in tennis shoes, then that's my experience. But if I have a plane, then that boulder becomes a little speck on my periscope as I'm looking down at Earth. So it's a matter of perspective. It's a matter of who am I? If I see that I am on the same level as that boulder, if I see that boulder and I are just two different entities of the same stature, same quality, same purpose in the same world, then I will see that the boulder is bigger, is stronger, is more powerful than I am. But if I see that the boulder and I are not the same, that I am something that's beyond the capacity, I have potential and capacities beyond that which the boulder has, then I can see that the boulder can be used from another vantage point as a vehicle to take me higher. If I walk up on it and I'm looking at it face to face, and I'm looking up at it, oh, I can't get up there. But if I realize it, if I can get up on top of this obstacle, then I'm going to have a vantage point which is going to give me a whole other perspective on life. So from one perspective, that boulder might be looked upon as an obstacle. But from another perspective, it can be looked upon as an opportunity. It's all a matter of how I view the world in which I live. If I see that I am defined by the world as a part of the world, as a human being who has its problems, then I'm going to be superimposed, or my potential is going to be restricted by my perspective on who I am as an element within this environment. But if I see that I may be dwelling within this body and I may be experiencing these human experiences, but my true potential is a divine being, then I realize that what I'm going through as a human, the human part of my spirit, is only a testing ground to prove me for the next level of experience, which has opened up my divinity. So as I'm moving through the different levels of spirit, from the mineral to the vegetable to the animal to the human to the divine, the consciousness that I am is learning self through each of these levels of experience. And once I awaken the divinity, the divine part of my spirit, then the consciousness, which has the same potential, the consciousness within the roach is the same conscious as within the rabbit, within me, within the air, within the water, because consciousness, again, is immaterial. It's everywhere instantaneously. If there's the illusion of separate, quote-unquote, selves, because of the spirit, the material basis of things. So the consciousness that's within my body is going to see the world differently than the consciousness that dwells within the tree, within the air, within the water, within the fish. That's the same consciousness. But it's the evolution of consciousness through all these various forms of expression, right? To know, to become an omniscient reality, God has to experience all things possible and know it. So it's the evolution of consciousness through all of these various elements of creation, which leads ultimately to the awakening of the divinity that man, God-man, will be able to be function as God on earth, because he's learned the experiences that the earth, all the experiences that the earth has to offer. And at that point, then, I no longer see myself as separate, but I realize that I'm one with all. Now, people talk about being one with all, everything is one, etc. But that's just a concept until we actually awaken and develop those vehicles that enable us to experience that reality. And that's what spirit is. It's the vehicles that enable us to experience reality. And the higher the level of the spirit, the greater the understanding and appreciation and the experience of that reality becomes. So as we go through...
Yes,
okay.
I'm sorry.
As we go through... next few weeks.
Go ahead, my brother. You
as
got
we break
it.
Down the different parts of the spirit, then we'll have more, we'll get more insight into, well, how do these things work together?
Everybody, my special guest is Orowad, Dr. Hehi Metura in Comet. We're talking about the seven divisions of the spirit. Again, the phone lines are packed. And if you have a question or you'd like to make a comment, now's your chance to do it. You can all just press one, and I'll bring you on board, and you can ask your question or make your comment. Well, I have a question for you, and that is, you gave an excellent analogy of the different modes of moving around in the earth realm. You can, you know, experience the earth, you know, walking in tennis shoes. You know, you can be in a car, you could be on a bike, you could be in a train, and you can be in a plane, in a rocket ship. Most people, when they are born, would you say that they come to earth wearing the tennis shoes? I mean, moving, is that the mode of getting around spiritually? And, you know, we're just speaking using, you know, different terms so we can make a distinction that people can understand. Would you say that most people are wearing tennis shoes in the early part of their life, and then as they grow, hopefully, as they mature, then they actually, you know, take off the tennis shoes? Just like, and we're going to just use physical people. Children might, tennis shoes might just be a part of their, you know, their wardrobe. They wear tennis shoes every day, you know. But as we grow, then unless you're into sports or something, you're going to take off those tennis shoes and start wearing some other shoes, you know. At some point, you're going to get a bike. And at some point, then you're going to get a car, you know. But would you say that for most people, that their consciousness is centered in that tennis shoe level, for lack of a better term, or sphere? Because when you look at the world and see where the world is and how it's been going, it appears that the majority of the people are definitely not in the rocket ship.
Well, it's not a perfect analogy, but we'll use it just to illustrate a point, meaning that there are seven levels to the spirit, and the majority of people on earth access and utilize the three lowest levels. In some instances, a part of the fourth level. So of the seven, and one being the highest and seven being the lowest, majority of people use seven and five and maybe a little bit of four. So, but ideally, all seven vehicles are there. But we have to be, you know, the question is it nature or nurture? And the answer is both. That there's a natural cultivation process that is to take place, but it has to be nurtured. And if all I know is how to drive a car, I can't teach you how to fly a plane.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, the majority of people, as I said, are operating out of these three lower divisions of the spirit, and because the environment, the culture, Western culture, which is the dominant culture in our lives, doesn't know about these other vehicles and how to get there. So you can't teach what you don't know. So because the culture doesn't provide the elements to guide and develop the individuals to understand and be able to use these higher vehicles, then the vehicles remain dormant. They're sitting there. The keys are in the ignition, but we don't even realize that there's a vehicle there.
Mm-hmm.
And worse yet, most people believe that they are the vehicle, meaning that rather than understanding that there's consciousness that's driving the car, most people believe that they are the car.
Brother, is it possible that you could talk for a moment just about energy, because I'm sure that when we're having a discussion about the seven divisions of the spirit, and I'd like to, if we could, I know we, this is just the intro, everybody, to the shows that we're going to be doing on the seven divisions of the spirit, so that you can get a background, an understanding, further, a deeper understanding of what the seven divisions of the spirit are. But could you label them, or what those seven, the names of those different divisions, so that people know when I start announcing on Facebook and via social media that we're going to be doing a show on this or on that, that they know that I'm talking about the seven divisions of the spirit?
Well, from the top down, according to our ancestors in ancient Kemet, the highest division, the first top division, is called the Ba. The second division is called the Ku. The third division is called the Shechem. The fourth division is called the Eb. The fifth division is called the Sahu. The sixth division is called the Kaibet. And the seventh division is called the Kab.
Okay. So now, talking about energy, and we're talking about the seven divisions of the spirit. So when you're talking about the spirit, we're not talking about consciousness slash will. We're talking about energy, matter, okay? So could you talk about energy and how energy manifests itself through the different, I guess, through the different divisions? This is going to take more than one show, everybody, so we're going to be doing other shows on this. But just if you could just even talk about energy, because, again, we're talking about the seven divisions of the spirit, and spirit is energy, just the role that energy even plays in this discussion. Because a lot of times people, when we think of energy, we just think of some invisible force. But in terms of the seven divisions of the spirit specifically, what role would energy just play in this discussion?
Well, again, spirit is energy. So when we talk about the vision of the two, we're talking about energy that has been organized on a certain level, in a certain sphere, on a certain vibratory pattern. So from the perspective of this, when we talk about the seven divisions of the spirit, the bottom two parts of spirit, the Kaveh and the Kab, make up what we call the physical world. So the energy, the things, energy that has been organized into things that we can perceive through our five senses, for the most part, make up that environment, or the lowest part of the world. Now, the upper parts of the four or five higher parts of the spirit are what is what we call metaphysical, or it's energy that's operating beyond the physical realm. So it's not something that is necessarily calculatable or measurable through the use of mechanical tools, but it nevertheless, it's energy on the more subtle level. So we have the metaphysical aspect of being, the metaphysical. But the understanding is that all of this is spirit. All of this is energy. It's just a different level, different vibratory pattern, vibratory rate.
Mm-hmm.
And energy, what we call the physical world, is not just the molecular, but it's also the subatomic. So that would also include electromagnetic spectrum, that would include quarks and gluons and things like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, I tell you, this interview is just so educational. And I want to thank all of the listeners. I mean, the phone lines are jam-packed. And again, I'm going to give you another opportunity. If I know you're, chewing, and I know it's like you don't want to talk with your mouth full, but everybody that's listening, if you have a question and you just like to ask Orwa a question or make a comment, all you have to do is press 1, and then I can bring you on board and you can ask your question or make your comment. You know, information like this is so powerful and important, because a lot of people, most of us, really want to understand the purpose of life, the meaning to life, why was I born? Why do I keep having these experiences, some reoccurring? You know, why is it that, you know, I keep throwing the dart in the dark, and, you know, sometimes I'm hitting my target, sometimes I'm missing my target, you know. Why is it that some people tend to be successful and others don't, you know? Why is it that some people are born with a silver spoon in their mouth? All these whys, why, you know? And for you to come on and to really break down the seven divisions of the spirit and the meaning of life and why we're here, you know, it's just phenomenal. And I just want to encourage the listeners out there that, you know, there's a community of people out here that are actually seeking consciously to be divine, to actually walk in their divinity, and they're doing everything that they know how to do that. I mean, they're utilizing all of the different tools that are made available to that end. And there are ways in which you can actually start the process of understanding why you're here. You can start actually with getting, if you've never gotten a reading, you need to get one. Brother Orwa, could you talk about even that briefly, just to understand why you're here? Because a lot of times people, they might listen to a show like this and they're really intrigued and they're like, hey, I want to know more. What's the next step? You know, I want to be divine. I want to know why I'm here. I need to know what lessons that I'm supposed to be learning. Could you talk about briefly just the need to even get a incarnation objective reading and start there, and even tell people how they can go about that, even if they're not in the Washington, D.C. area? Maybe you can give a number for people who want more information on how they can continue this discussion, because I know that the light for a lot of people is going to go off, or be turned on, shall I say, after hearing this show. They're going to be like, that's what I've been waiting for. Now, what's the next step? So could you talk about just the I.O. and how that can help people to determine even why we're here? Now that we know, on a broad sense, you really broke it down on a broad sense, why God created the world and why God created man, and how man is that highest vehicle through which, or the only vehicle that man, that God has endowed with free will, that we can actually choose and make the choice to be divine, because the other animals and the other expressions of God are set. But man has the ability to go beyond the conditioning, and or to a degree. But could you talk about, so for those who want to take it to the next level and really now narrow it down, okay, now I know why God created the world. I know why God created man. But now what am I personally supposed to be working on? What lessons am I supposed to be learning? Could you talk about the incarnation objective for a moment?
Okay, well, briefly, as you indicated, you know, each of us comes to Earth with the ultimate goal of becoming a divine being. As we said earlier, our paths to that goal are going to be different because we have different life, past life experiences, etc. So if we look at life as being analogous to school, for lack of a better analogy, and the goal, we'll say, is to graduate from being a student into being a teacher. So, and we'll just, for lack of a better analogy, we'll make teacher God, and the student is the one who's learning experiences on different levels, through different stages, through different times, in order to achieve that ultimate goal of being able to teach. So I may come into the world having a backdrop of accomplishing the lessons of the first, second, and third grade.
Mm-hmm.
But I may not have done so well, even though I passed, I may not have done so well. So you may have also come into the world with having a backdrop of first, second, and third grade. But you didn't have any problem with spelling. You might have had a problem with social studies. Another person, mm-hmm. In our same class, the same group, age group, and had a problem with math or science or whatever. So even though we're all coming in with the same goal and coming in at the same level, this is not to say everyone's at the same level, but even on the, in the instance where people are on the same level, we're going to have different nuances that we have to address as we begin to try to complete our studies. So a lot of times we come in the third grade, some of us might come in on the fifth grade level. Some of us might come in the kindergarten level. So because we all come in different spaces and different places, then we each need to know, even though we're all trying to get to this top level here to be a teacher, what are the specific things I need to learn now that are going to help me prepare for the next stage of my development. And that's where the definitely reading of the incarnation comes in. It gives us the ability to identify, well, what are the opportunities, what are the challenges, what are the capabilities, potentials that I have, what are the things I need to be prepared for, what are the things I'm going to have to confront, how do I need to confront these things in order for me to become the complete student that I need to become as I move toward my ultimate goals. So, and this is where and how the African approach excels once again. Because in other traditions, there may be an understanding that man is made in the divine image, but there's no step-by-step curriculum to get a person from point A to point B. So the process of spiritual initiation and the use of the divination processes that are incorporated into the Kemetic system enable us to make the same kinds of progressions that our ancestors made in ancient Kemet. And if they were able to develop the kind of civilization that they developed 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, that even today the world still marvels at, just think of what we can do today if we apply those same principles, the same practice, the same teaching, the same protocols, and begin to master and move on to reconstruct our world.
You know, Brother Orwa, I wish I could. I'm trying. I guess part of me just don't even want to hang up the phone, man. I'm enjoying this information so much, brother. I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to be my guest today. And for those who might want to get a reading, if you're in the D.C. area, could you give a number for them so they can call and schedule a reading to find? If you don't know what your lessons are in this lifetime and you want to know, you want a place to start, Brother Orwell, how could they get a reading if they were in the D.C. area?
If they're in the D.C. area, they can call 202-723-5566 and call and just schedule an appointment. Most of those appointments are done on Saturdays. They can come by and schedule an appointment with 6224 3rd Street Northwest in D.C. If they're in other parts of the U.S. Or even other parts of the world, so to speak. If they want to find an area or a group or a half for them, they can call 718-469-3199, Tawi Enterprises, and they can then direct them to where they can, how they can link up with other people in their area, and they can also link them into the initiation program. Because ultimately, we talked about how in order for us to realize our true potential, there has to be an environment that is going to nurture and cultivate and to guide us toward that awakening. Because the current environment doesn't have the elements necessary, the nutrients necessary to awaken the divinity within us.
Mm-hmm.
So the current environment will only allow us the levels of experience, the kind of nutrients that we have to experience that we're having. If we want to nurture our spirit so that the divine can awaken, then we have to bring in some new elements, some new nutrients into our diet. And that's what the initiation program does. So they can call 718-469-3199 to find out how they can become a part of the initiation program. So that will help provide them with the nutrients necessary to awaken and cultivate the divine part of our spirit.
You know, I want to thank you again, Brother Owa, for, you know, agreeing to be my guest, everybody. The title of this series is The Seven Divisions of the Spirit. Today's show was an introduction. The next show, hopefully, we're going to reschedule it for next Friday, and that's going to be from 7 to 8 p.m. as well, and we'll be discussing the Cab and the Kibit. We'll be going up the levels until we actually get to the top. Okay, so the Cab and the Kibit will be next Friday from 7 to 8. Brother Owa, any parting words for our listeners before you leave this afternoon, that you know, just to close out the show on the this intro on the seven divisions of the Spirit?
I know, we just look forward to spending this time, and we'll probably come down the tree and then go back up the tree, just to
have
perspective.
Okay, awesome. Well, so then I take that back. It won't be the Cab and the Kibit then. Okay, so
well,
tune in next Friday.
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying we're not going to focus on the Kibit and Cab. We'll probably come down just so they can see the linkages of where we're going to go.
Okay. Okay. Okay, sounds good. Well, everybody, I want to thank you so much for your time. And I just want to say this to everybody. You know, you tuned in. The phone lines are jammed, okay? So that means when the word went out, you heard it and you tuned in. And my question for you is, now, what are you going to do with this information, okay? Because to know truth, you must live it, okay? I mean, it's great to get information. It's great to hear information. It's great to hear information that, you know, just stimulates your mind. And, you know, intellectually, you got it. I mean, you got it. I mean, you know, there are a lot of people out there that hear this information on ancient Kemet, and it's fascinating. And you change your name, and now you're Ankhra Patah Ma'ah. And I don't personally know anybody named Ankhra Patah Ma'ah, but just for the sake of this discussion, now you're Ankhra Patah Ma'ah, okay? Now you've gone natural, okay, sisters? You took the perm out, and now you've gone natural. And now you're wearing your African clothes, and you're wearing the Ankh, but you still get angry, okay? You still get jealous. You still get worried, you know? You know. So let's take this information and let just the information part be the beginning, okay, because we're here to be divine, and it's a process. I know it's a process. Doesn't happen overnight, but it can happen. But you got to do more than just listen to the information, and then after the show be like, you know, that was good. That was good information, but to what end? These shows are being brought to you because God needs you to come into the world. And fulfilling God's need is the highest act of love. That's the law of my eye. So now let's live this so that we can make the world better for you, for me, for my children, for your children, okay? And you can start overcoming in this lifetime, okay? That's my spiel. My name is Jawanza. I want to thank you again, Brother Owa. I say Anetra Rock, peace and blessings to all of the members of the Osara Set Society that have tuned in. Thank you so much for sharing the link. I saw all the people that were sharing it on Facebook. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much. Tuau. And for those who haven't shared it, please do. Because, again, this information, if you liked it, then somebody you know would like it as well. Again, my name is Jawanza. Listen, I want you to go down the archives. If you're tuning into the show for the first time, we got an awesome archives. Brother Owa has done an awesome series with me before. He's been on multiple times, many times. He did the 11 Laws of God. I mean, did God Knows Best, talking about the I Ching. I mean, we got shows with Shechem Meshechem, Rahu Nefa Amen on Stress Free for Life, different priests and priestesses of the Osara Set Society, Shechem Me'ab Neter, I mean, Hexim Suharu, we've got shows with Shechem Sa'antaku Nenebu, I mean, you name it, Sanu Para, I mean, just all you got to do is just scroll down the archives and you'll see all of these awesome shows. And again, they're brought to you for the purpose of becoming a divine being, manifesting that divinity on earth. Okay, so until the next time, everybody, thank you so much for tuning in. Again, please spread the word. My name is Jawanza. Brother Owa, I will be in touch, my brother. Thank you so much.
Okay, that's all.
Okay.
Thank you.
Everybody, thank you so much for your time. Until the next time, it's a poo.